actually, I heard on the Twitter vine that you aren't feeling so well this morning.
Yeah, I'm actually a little better now. I've been battling this little cold for the last couple of days that I can't quite shake.
What do you do? I mean, are you into the natural and the rest?
Mm-hmm. I do acupuncture. Like when I try to get it as soon as it's coming on, I do acupuncture usually, and that usually gets it, and I'll take some herbs. So this time she didn't bring her herbs because there was a miscommunication, so I'm getting my herbs tonight.
Oh, terrific.
And
I know,
should be fine and dandy.
It's amazing. Between Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn, it's like people know what you're doing more than you do.
Yes. But, you know, it's weird. I've had it for a couple of days now, and it's worse in the morning. And that's a bummer because I'm a morning person. So usually that's when I feel my best, so I can tell that something's not quite right.
Well,
I'm not working out.
You're so busy. Huh? Your schedule's so, you know, around the clock. I mean, I guess it's a good lesson for caregivers about finding ways to take care of yourself.
Yes. Well, you know, my schedule now is that I'm taking the summer off because I did have to take care of so many people and so much business over the past 3 years. It feels like it's been nonstop that I needed a break. I needed a vacation. I really needed a break. And so I'm actually just doing a lot of hanging out at home and meditating and taking care of me. Because as you know, for caregivers, it's very, very important that you take care of yourself. And, you know, as much as I tried while I was taking care of my dad, I'm sure I slipped a little.
Well, you know, let's start there. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit. You have been doing some active caregiving over the last few years. How's the family? What's going on? Where is your caregiving role right now?
I'll tell you where I'm at right now. Well, I think about 3 years ago, my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer, and she underwent treatment, and I flew out to New York quite often to help her through her treatment. And it was interesting because before that, I had done some work with Lisa Gibbons and her foundation, giving some dance therapy classes to some seniors with Alzheimer's. And Lisa Gibbons gave me some wonderful advice about being a caregiver because she had been a caregiver to her mother who had Alzheimer's, and she's written a beautiful book about it. And she's just such a wonderful person. Anything she says, I listen carefully to. And she said, you know, when you're a caregiver, it's so important that you take care of yourself, and often the caregiver will get sick and will get very sick, actually. There's statistics to show that caregivers can often, I don't remember exactly what the quote was, but if it was that they can, I remember it was impactful. So it wasn't that they died before.
Well, there are a few quotes, and actually when we host our Fearless Caregiver conferences or I talk around the country, the mm-hmm. one quote that just stops people is that if you're a caregiver of somebody living with cognitive disorders in particular, you know,
mm-hmm. Alzheimer's or dementia.
Dementia. 40% of these caregivers will die before the loved ones do.
Okay, so that was what it was. Okay, I wasn't sure because it doesn't sound real.
Yeah,
it's a
Stanford
staggering
University.
Statistic. But it's a staggering statistic, and it is something that stops you dead in your tracks. So when she told me that, when my mom was sick and my role then became the caregiver, I realized, okay, so you have to immediately, I went in knowing that I needed to find a balance between taking care of my mom and doing what I needed to do for her, and helping her through what is a very difficult time in her life, and maintaining the life that I've created for myself and my own health so that I can continue to support her and be there for her on all levels. And so that was helpful. My mom was in New York, and she actually had a really good support family there. Her husband was there, her new husband, not my dad, but her new husband was there with her, and he had actually been a caregiver in his life because my mom's sister passed away of cancer, and he was there for her. So she had a great support team, so once I felt comfortable, I didn't go quite as often. But I was there at the beginning helping her look at all the different forms of treatment. And really, when you're a caregiver, it's about helping the person who's going through whatever it is they're going through with decisions, not making them for them.
Yeah, actually, it's great to hear you say that, and I think that it's important for family caregivers to hear you say that. We always say that caring for yourself is job one, because who's going to step in and care for you and them when you fall apart because you took yourself out of the circle of care and you're not caring for yourself at all? So,
Absolutely. You know, job one, yes. You have to take care of yourself because without you, if you're the caregiver, what does anybody have, the people that are involved in that situation?
True. So, and that's where we always say, okay, fine. Who do you elect to take care of both of you? And most caregivers go, uh-oh.
Exactly. And then I do believe that the next role is then to help them make good decisions about how they want to take care of themselves and their future and what medical treatments they want to take and what course of action they want to do and what supplementary health care and alternative therapies are interesting or not interesting. You know, and when my dad, so that was my mom, and then it was actually a very beautiful experience because as every caregiver knows, there's a bond that reforms especially when it's your parents, that you get close to your parents again in a way that, you know, at least for myself, I hadn't been that close to them in a while. So by being their caregiver, there's a beautiful bond that also grows, and there's a lot of beautiful moments that happen because you're spending such quality time with someone that you care about. So there's a lot of beautiful things that happen as well, and I found that to be such a beautiful catalyst that my mom had cancer, and it was such a scary word, but at the same time, so many beautiful things happened. Like now my mom is in remission, and she's living a healthier lifestyle than she did before she had cancer, and she's much more aware of her health, and she has more gratitude towards her health, and she takes, it's just something, I guess her awareness, her overall awareness of health has changed, and I am grateful for that because that makes me feel more confident in the choices that she's making in her life and how she's taking care of herself. So then my dad, about a year ago, was diagnosed with basal tongue cancer about the same time as Kirk Douglas.
Right.
And the same kind of cancer. It was a very, very difficult battle to go through. And they say that this form of treatment, chemotherapy treatment and radiation, is probably the most difficult of all cancer treatments. And it was hard, I have to say. I was exhausted, and my dad's a tough guy, and he's very loving, but he's also tough, and he's sort of set in his ways. And there was a lot of arguing that went on during this time about, you know, like I thought I saw things that could help him, and he was resisting a lot. And then that was it at the beginning because this was a new situation. This wasn't my mom, and I was trying to do it the same way I did it with my mom, but I was now giving care to my dad, and I needed to change the way I was thinking about it. So once I realized that my dad was different than my mom and that I needed to support him in a different way, then it calmed down. And once he realized that he needed a little help, then it helped. Because sometimes people don't want the care that you're offering, and that can be really frustrating.
No, the idea of the interpersonal relationship, you know, and so many times we hear from caregivers that it positively affected their spirituality, it positively affected their relationship with their loved one, and sometimes negatively. And I think that's a really good point, is that just because you cared for one loved one, now you can't go and use the same armor, ammunition, support, and method for the next loved one because that's a different person.
Yeah. It's so individual. And then, you know, my dad, you know, we went through some hard times, and it got very scary a few times, and my dad made it through the treatment and was cancer-free after all was said and done, and then he went back to Hawaii, but he still has a feeding tube. And actually, the reason why this was also so different was that my dad was living here in Los Angeles through this treatment, and he's not a Los Angeles person. He's not comfortable here. He didn't have any other support except me. When I was taking care of my mom, she had her family around her up there in New York as well, but my dad left all of his friends behind in Hawaii to be up here, so it was only myself and my brother who lives in Orange County, but he lives in Orange County. So there was a lot more, I felt more responsibility, and I put more pressure on myself. And once I relieved myself of feeling like, oh, well, he flew out here and I'm the only one and I need to do all of it, and realized that it was going to be a partnership between he and I and the doctors. It was a collaborative experience. Once we sort of got into that mindset, and also it was a collaborative experience with my family, you know, my fiance and his daughter, who were able to be non-family members without any of the history of my family or any of the way family sometimes gets with each other when undergoing heavy treatments or difficult times. They were able to just be unconditionally supportive and not quite as involved, which was a beautiful thing.
So I'd like
and
to
I'm
call
very,
that
very
caregivers,
grateful.
Caregivers. They were caregivers.
Yes, I had a caregiver's caregiver. And I have to say, I don't know if I would have made it through that time without Jesse. You know, he was the caregiver of the caregiver, and I'm so grateful because you need that when you're going through that. But my dad is okay, and then he went home and was recently diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer.
Oh, boy.
And so this is now yet another experience because he's grown a lot and knows a lot more about how to make better decisions for himself and knows how to ask the questions because in the beginning, the first time around, he was afraid to ask doctors questions and didn't understand things and sort of left not understanding what was going to happen to him. And I wanted him to understand so he could choose and feel in control of what was happening, at least, you know, with the decisions of which treatment to take and not to take and which medications he felt he needed and learning how to communicate with the doctor. So now he's a different person, and I've actually had to pull back what I'm doing for him in this process because he wants to stay in Hawaii for treatment this time. And I'm sort of just like a consultant as opposed to being hands-on like I was last time. And so once again, it has evolved and changed. And, you know, I'm going to do whatever I can to help him. But this time, I'm also making sure that I take care of myself in the meantime. Because the last one, I think, I didn't have the perfect balance. I didn't have, not the perfect balance because nothing's perfect, but I didn't have quite the right balance. I felt a little depleted because I was also working.
You know, you also mentioned one of my favorite words when it comes to family caregiving, and it's partnership. The phrase that always throws me when people talk about or I see book titles, parenting your parent. You're never parenting your parent. That's you know, ridiculous. No matter what stage they're in, it's always the respect that's needed to be given is a partnership. And it sounds like you did find that perfect balance.
I'm very grateful because at first it wasn't. You know, there were moments when I felt like I knew better, or I felt, and I'm certain that he felt he knew better. And we were, after 8 months of sort of intense, I would call it like therapeutic interactions between he and I, we were able to find this place of, oh, okay, I see what works best is when I suggest something and I help him with the research and I keep reiterating any sort of background knowledge, then he can absorb it at his pace, not my pace. And when he is ready to make a decision, he'll come back to me and tell me. And that it's not about, hey, this is what I think is best and pushing him in that direction. Because that's easy to fall trap to. But everybody's different. And everybody makes decisions for different reasons. Like, if I were undergoing what my dad was going through, I would probably come back to Los Angeles and work with the same doctor who did such an amazing job with him. But my dad wants to stay in Hawaii and be around his friends because he's more interested in having a larger support team, and he feels he doesn't want to put quite as much pressure on me. But I'm happy to have him back. In fact, I'm renovating my back house just in case mm-hmm. because you never know. And if he decides he wants to come back, it can be a choice that he can make or not make. Either way, I'm not offended, and I would be happy to help him in any way I can get through it because it's scary. When you're sick, you know, health is so beautiful and it's so precious and it's such a mystery, you know. It can be taken away in a moment's notice and suddenly you're dependent on somebody else. And I think nobody wants that. And I know that despite whatever frustrations I was going through as a caregiver, I know that he in no way, shape, or form wanted to have to depend on anybody. And that's an important thing to understand as a caregiver, to give them their own grace back and let them feel it's important for people to feel their own independence while going through this, because once you undergo any type of treatment, you sort of surrender your body to the doctors on so many levels, you know, whether you're getting medications or treatments or infusions. And there's a sense of like of self-pride that is very important to maintain.
It
comes in many different ways.
I think so, too. And I think, although, you know, we're caregiver.com, today's Caregiver Magazine, Fearless Caregiver Conference, but I don't really like the word. The word is so, you know, one-directional. I'm giving
yeah,
here.
It is.
I like your phrase, therapeutic interactions, and I think that if the word was, you know, loved one, I'm a loved one. That's all. I don't need to be, you know, given any kind of phrase, but it is a good and honorable, you know, phrase to be a caregiver. It's just, it is more of a partnership if done well, I think.
I agree. I think that's, I'm glad to hear that that's your approach and that's your philosophy, because I'm right behind you. I support you 100% on that.
You mentioned one of my favorite people and a dear friend, Lisa Givens. Her foundation was launched here, actually, the foundation itself, and she's been to hosted a few of our events, our Fearless Caregiver conferences around the country, and mm-hmm. and she's terrific. She hosted one for us in L.A. and one in a few here in Florida. And boy, is she a caregiver's caregiver. I'm just, you know, I find that when we host the events, and we just did our 110th.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And we host these Fearless Caregiver conferences around the country, and we have celebrities involved in caregiving, such as Lisa and Debbie Reynolds and Clay Aiken and Linda Dano. I find that the thing that connects the family caregivers with the celebrity in the room is not at all the latest episode of their TV show or their movie, but mm-hmm. that all goes away. And the common denominator is the shared act of caring for loved ones. And they talk caregiver to caregiver. And I always say if you have 400 family caregivers in a room and a celebrity who is a caregiver, you actually have 401 family caregivers in a room and nothing else counts.
Yeah.
What do you hear from family caregivers when you meet them in person?
You know, I guess what I can say that I work with a foundation called the Andrew Rizzo Foundation, and they do pediatric dance therapy for they do movement therapy for pediatric cancer patients. And the parents of these young children, you know, which is also, it's caregiving, it's parenting. And you're right with this term.
I know.
But often they feel helpless. I think the biggest frustration that I see and that I feel from them is that they feel helpless, that they don't know, or they can't take away the pain, they can't take away the suffering. And that is heartbreaking to see, especially when it's heartbreaking to see on any level for any human being, because I know that feeling. I remember when my dad was coming out of, you know, his chemotherapy treatments, and he was like a third of the human being he was when he started the treatment, you know, as far as like his life force. And it was scary, and I wanted to be able to change it, but that's not possible. That's not an option, and people spend a lot of time and energy in that space, and, you know, I don't blame them at all because I know the feeling, but the important thing to do when you're around other caregivers who are at this point is to help them remember that there is so much they can do in other areas. You know, whether it's, for instance, on the dance movement therapy, them just joining in with their child, them bringing their child to the movement therapy class, them talking to the movement therapist and finding out, you know, that everybody else feels helpless makes them feel less helpless. Because it's sort of just, we can't do it for them, and we can't necessarily change the outcome, and nor can we change the circumstances. But what we can do, circumstances of the disease, maybe, but what we can do are change the little things in how we interact with them, what we do for the next 5 minutes, how we help them interact with the doctors and talking about medication and finding ways to ease pain and suffering in that way. You know, and it's interesting because, you know, for every person and for every caregiver and for every patient, it's very different path. So it's hard to speak in general terms.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought up your work with the Andrea Rizzo Foundation, because I think what you're doing with them is terrific, and I think they're terrific. But can you go into a little bit more about their mission and actually how did you become directly involved?
Well, I was working on Dance with the Stars, and there was this woman sitting to the right of me, and she had the brightest light, and she was sitting next to a young lady who I could tell was undergoing some sort of treatment, maybe probably chemotherapy. And I don't know, this woman just had the brightest light. She just kept smiling and she kept smiling. And so I went over to her during the commercial break and I asked her who she was, and she introduced herself as Susan Rizzo, and she told me about her foundation, and I said, sign me up. And it took a long time because she couldn't find me at first, but we eventually found each other, and now I'm their spokesperson, and I'm very grateful because she is the inspiration. Like, I take no credit for this foundation. This is her foundation. I'm just somebody to help her raise awareness about her foundation and what she's doing with cancer, young pediatric cancer patients, and bringing them movement therapy, because I come from the world of movement therapy. When I was 3 years old, I took creative dance. That was my introduction to dance. And what I learned about myself, how I learned to express myself, and the freedom of movement and all the healing properties of dance were evident to me at that young age, because I remember grabbing the little silk scarf and never feeling better than I did when I ran around that room to music, thinking I was dancing, but I wasn't. You know, I was doing whatever, but I was creatively moving. And it was the best experience. I don't remember much about my childhood, but I do remember that day in an open-air pavilion with a magenta scarf, running around and feeling so free and empowered. Like she said, I remember she said, take the scarf and do whatever you want to the music. And I just felt like the queen of my own little universe. And to be able to give these patients a moment like that through, we have a licensed movement therapist. It's not just like dancers coming in and, you know, holding a little dance class. It's a lot more than that. What we're doing is we're accessing their emotions, because through movement therapy, you're able to see where they're holding tension, where they're holding fear. Through types of movement, you can kind of access their emotional state. And then the emotions are released through the session by movement, by, you know, all different forms of movement. Sometimes it's as simple as like rolling our eyes up around in circles. Sometimes it's just smiling and not smiling, depending on the level of health of each individual patient. Because a lot of them come in and they have the IVs hooked up to them, and, you know, some of them are actually still in bed and because they've had bone marrow transplants. And, you know, people are in varying degrees of, I wouldn't say pain, but they're in different stages of their illness.
So how do the kids respond to the pediatric? I think it's terrific, pediatric dance therapy. It even sounds
wonderful.
Terrific.
In 20 minutes, like when we do the group sessions, in 20 minutes, Dr. Lori Baudino, who's our dance therapist here in Los Angeles, one of them, some people go from being happy to be there to even like so joyful it's ridiculous, or from being super scared and very timid, and you can tell in obvious physical pain, and so therefore really contracted inward, as people do when they're in pain. You can see by the end of the session there has been an opening and there has been a release. Sometimes the muscles are less contracted. The face is much more relaxed. The eyes are brighter. Sometimes there's giggling. Sometimes there's laughing. Some people will get up and, you know, they'll move and they'll dance. Some of them aren't capable of doing that, so they'll shake their head. And you can just see the empowering feeling that they have. And, you know, like I said earlier, when any patients are undergoing treatment, the doctors are really in charge of the body. So in this brief moment, you know, 20 minutes of their day, they're in charge of their body, and that is empowering. And you can see them feel so good about themselves. It's a joy. It's an amazing experience. I have some of my friends who've come to the therapy sessions, and they've said, you know, I can't go again because it's so sad. And it shocks me because I find the experience, while it's heartbreaking to know that such young children are suffering, it's also really important. And it's important to be there for them and help create an environment where they can feel joy and express themselves and be creative and feel, I'm going to say normal in quotation marks for lack of a better word,
right,
because I don't think that's quite the right word, but like a normal young child, normal young healthy child.
I bet the parents are thrilled to see joy in their kids' faces, maybe for the first time.
Yeah, they are. And it's a beautiful thing to see. I mean, I yeah, it's just, it takes your breath away. It makes you realize what life is all about. Life is, you know, as great as my job is and how wonderful it is to be on a number one show on TV, that, like you said, it disappears. It means nothing in the face of what I see of these young kids and what they're going through, and being able to give them a moment's joy. That, to me is success. That is joy. That is life. That's the meaning of life.
I like that line, that success. Yeah, I get that. That's connection, and that's being able to allow somebody who may never have been able to feel what you felt at 3 years old to feel the same way in their own way.
Yes, because I wish everyone could feel what I feel when I dance. You know, I miss it myself. You know, I don't dance as much as I used to because I'm getting older now. And I have my own aches and pains.
So then how does a parent get their child involved in the foundation programs?
Well, what's great, the way this program works is that the hospital, the nursing staff, they make the recommendation for the child to receive the services. And sometimes they can make the recommendation for them to receive services in their room or in small groups, you know, like in the playroom with the movement therapist. And it's really, I guess, what people can do is ask their hospital staff about Drea's Dream if they'd like it in their hospital if they don't already have it. But right now we're in 20 sites across the country, including, you know, the hospitals, Mattel Children's Hospital, L.A. Children's Hospital. The program started in Memorial Sloan Kettering, which to me says a lot because it is, Memorial Sloan Kettering is sort of the foundation of, you know, cancer research, at least on the East Coast. And the fact
Absolutely.
That they put their stamp of approval on it and helped us get started, it's pretty wonderful.
Well, we're going to put the website and the contact information in the article. And,
oh, good. Thank you.
It's at dreasdream.org?
Yes, dreasdream.org.
So that's
It has many names. It's called the Andrea Rizzo Foundation, but it's dreasdream.org. Drea's Dream is actually the program, and Andrea Rizzo Foundation is the foundation that supports financially the program of the pediatric dance therapy program.
Okay. Well, we'll put all that in there because
okay.
I think
Thank you.
This is going to be very important for parents and parents who are, you know, parents of caregivers of children who will need this. They'll be thrilled that you were talking about it. I think it's very important.
Yeah. It's so hard.
So now I'm going to ask you my elevator question.
Mm-hmm.
You get an elevator. You're in the New York. Got
mm-hmm.
a minute to get up, I don't know, 50 stories or something. You're standing there with a family caregiver. What mm-hmm. would that one most important piece of advice you'd like to impart to that family caregiver before the elevator door opens and you walk out?
Oh, it would obviously be make sure you take care of yourself.
That's pretty good.
I mean, immediately, you please take care of yourself and breathe. Remember to breathe and step outside and take a moment for yourself. Take many moments for yourself throughout the day.
Well, I don't think it could be said better or more succinctly, actually. That's where all caregiving starts, I think, is to be able to care for yourself so you're able to care for your loved ones.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say, I think it's evident the way you care for yourself, the way you care for your loved ones is the way you should also care for yourself.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, that's really nice. Just think of yourself as the person you're caring for
right.
as well as you care for your loved one, and you'll be fine.
Yes. Make yourself the object of your own care.
And that may be the title of the article.
Ooh.
Well,
I love that you're so passionate.
Well, you obviously are, and you bring it out, and it's really lovely that with everything you've got going on, you're also so passionate about Andrea Rizzo Foundation and what they're doing. And I know it started because of a personal
tragedy
that happened in the Rizzo family.
Yes. That her daughter, Andrea, had cancer when she was young and when she was a child, and she had dance therapy or movement therapy, and she was later diagnosed cancer-free and was doing great and was moving on with her life, and she became a dance therapist herself and was going to give back in such a beautiful way, and then was tragically killed in a car accident.
Oh, boy.
And, yeah, it's just, you know, it's horrible. But her mom is continuing on in her name. And it's a beautiful thing. And when you meet this woman, which, you know, maybe one day you will, she's got a very bright light, you know. This is her foundation. I'm only here to help spread the word and bring awareness to what she is really doing for the world. You know, and I believe full-heartedly in what she's doing, and I support her in any way I can.
Well, you know, it's interesting because yourself or Lisa or Clay Aiken, you know, through his foundation, or even the person who was a family caregiver and went back to school and is now a social worker, most of the really dynamic, terrific work I've seen for family caregivers, if you drill down, there's a family caregiver story at the bottom of it.
Yeah, I can see that. I can imagine that.
Well, I thank you so much. Thank you for what you're doing, and thank you for your passion and your energy, and thank you for spending some time with us. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you. Thank you. This is actually a wonderful conversation. I really appreciate it. So good luck with everything, and if you need anything else, you let me know.